All right. Okay. We should start. Thank you for coming. And if there are other people that want to participate in person or on Zoom, please let them know. Mirtz Hashem will be meeting going forward on Mondays at around 2:30. The topic that I want to learn with you for now is tzedakah. Tzedakah. We said it's going to be Gemara Be'iyun. We're using Chumashim today, but going forward, we will use Gemaras. Tzedakah is challenging. To learn the topic of tzedakah is very challenging for several reasons. The first is, where is it in Shas? So in the email that I sent out, I indicated it's actually spread out through a number of places. Bava Basra.
You want a donation.
Bava Basra, Gittin, Ksubas. A little bit of Chulin and a little bit of Nedarim. It's kind of scattered all around. So that's just one of the challenges, which is why we're not going to be going according to the Gemara. We're going to be going according to the Shulchan Aruch and then looking at the topics that the Shulchan Aruch talks about from the Gemaras. Mm-hmm. So that's just one challenge. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch were the first ones to kind of make a entire sugya out of tzedakah. So that's one challenge, just on a technical scale. The other is more conceptual, which is when we think of tzedakah. So when somebody was making the flyer for me, she put on the flyer at first, Hilchos Choshen Mishpat. So I said, that's not true. So where is, you would think it's in Choshen Mishpat, but Hilchos Tzedakah is not in Choshen Mishpat. Where is it?
Yoredeya,
exactly. So there are four halakim of Shulchan Aruch. Ar Chaim talks about daily life stuff. Evan Ezer talks about marriage. Choshen Mishpat talks about monetary. Yoredeya, it's sort of a catch-all, but the common denominator is what we would call Isser Veheter, things that are either Usser or Mutter, not Chayiv or Putter like other monetary stuff. It's whether this is Mutter or Usser to do. That's why we have Trefa. We have Kashrus there, we have Nida there, we have Sefer Torah there, and Mezuzah. All of those things have in common is that it's either Usser or Mutter. When I was applying to yeshivas in 12th grade, so one of the yeshivas that I applied to was Toras Moshe in Israel, run by Rav Moshe Meiselman, and so they had a faher going in. It was like an admissions test. And just like in YU, they have like Misora about questions that they ask on tests. So there was a whole tradition about what questions the Mashkiach would ask on your entrance exam to Taras Moshe. So the first was, what are the seven names of Yisro? So that's to check if you learn Rashi on Chumash. Another question was, what section is Hilchos Ribbis in Shulchan Aruch? The answer is Yoredeya. And then the follow-up question he asked me was, why? That they hadn't told me, so I didn't know.
That's actually easy.
Why is it?
Exactly,
so that's what he told me. That's how I first learned about this, that Choshen Mishpat deals with money, but money in the sense of whether it's whether I'm liable to pay you something or you're liable to pay me something. Mm-hmm. Yoredeya is whether I'm allowed to have this money or I'm not allowed to have this money. Am I allowed to do this with money or am I not allowed to do this with money? So tzedakah also falls into that category. So that in itself highlights something interesting about tzedakah, which is it's less about money and it's more about iser and heter. This has a lot of ramifications for probably the first sugya that we'll see, which is kofin al hatzedakah, which literally means that we can force people to give tzedakah. Mm-hmm. If Beis Din believes that you're not pulling your weight financially in donating, and they've assessed you that you can give more, they can literally just take your money and give it away to whoever they deem fit. Now, it can't be a random person. Like, I can't go up and say, well, I'm part of the administration here, but like a random person in a community can't just go up and say, I've assessed that you can give more, I'm now going to take and give it to somebody else. The Nosei Kelim explain from the Gemara that we're talking about community. That the community as a board doesn't have to be religious or political. It could be town leadership can come and take your money and give it to somebody else. Which actually leads to the second I guess, challenge of Hilchos Tzedakah, of learning Tzedakah, which is who exactly, what exactly is the mitzvah of Tzedakah? Like, when you hear Tzedakah, what do you think? You think, when somebody comes to my door, or I'm in shul and there's a guy collecting, so I give him a dollar, I give him a quarter, or I write him a check. But then there's another kind of tzedakah. There's yizkor appeals. There's fundraising for a yeshiva. Is that tzedakah also? Or there's the fund for the needy. You know, that's more classical. Mm-hmm. But that's communal. So the Gemara that talks about forcing is talking about communal stuff that agents of the community can levy taxes on a person. So that's how it comes up in Bava Basra. But in the first paragraph of Bava Basra, it talks about being neighbors and community rights. You know, because I live in this community, I get this. I can demand that you don't, you know, I can demand the enforcement of certain zoning laws. And also because I live in the community can tax me to help strengthen the city walls or the city sewer system. Part of that is, in addition to the physical safety of the community, there was also charities. There were different types of charities in the times of the Gemara. They had what was known as the tamchoi, for lack of a better term, that would be like a soup kitchen. Mm-hmm. Basically, for people that couldn't afford anything, they could just come into the shul and there would be a plate of food that you could take from. Then there was a more sophisticated level, which is maybe you have food for today, but you need money for expenses for the week. So that was another fund that they collected for money. So the Gemara says, how long do I have to live in a community before I'm obligated to pay those tzedakah, quote-unquote, taxes? So I wouldn't think of that as tzedakah. I would think of that as a tax. It's just, you know, just like we have social... Right, we have Social Security, we have Medicare, we have Medicaid, we have social services for people, we have food stamps. I wouldn't think of that as tzedakah. I would think of that as just a tax that the community has. But the Gemara actually believes that that's part of tzedakah. So how is that connected?
It also depends what they're collecting the money for. If they're collecting money, for the example you gave of building the city walls or rebuilding or whatever, I wouldn't consider that tzedakah. But if they're collecting money for the tamchum or for the needy people, that, you know, it depends on how the money they're collecting is going to be used.
Got to go back to the where does tzedakah end and taxes begin, or where do taxes end and tzedakah begins?
Yeah, so that's the question. So you're saying it really depends on the case, and that's one of the challenges mm-hmm. that I hope to learn with you. The source that we could force people to give tzedakah is actually from the fact that we can force people to pay taxes. That's the source. That's the source, which means that since individuals can't force you to pay taxes, individuals can't force you to give tzedakah either. So is tzedakah something that, like, is really a forcible thing? Meaning, if I was writing the Shulchan Aruch, why would I make a big chiddush saying, oh, I can force you to pay tzedakah?
Because you're not living in the Middle Ages.
Oh, okay, but if the whole reason why I can force you to pay taxes is because I can force you to give tzedakah. So it's not a Hilchos Tzedakah thing. It's a living together thing that the community is authorized to take money from you and reallocate it to needs that they see fit. And some of those can be poor people. So that's another thing, meaning are these two areas connected? This also has ramifications for priorities in tzedakah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Meaning when you may have heard, Aniya Ircha Kodman, that the poor people in your city take precedence over somebody else. At the same time, and that makes sense when you think about it from a taxes perspective. At the same time, though, Eretz Yisrael also comes first. And then before both of those, your own family comes first, even if they don't live in the town. So the question is, how are all of these things connected? So that's another challenge about trying to pinpoint what exactly the nature of tzedakah is. Rav Rosenzweig, which I hope to use a piece that he wrote, he wrote an article about tzedakah where the title is Tzedakah Kechiyuv U'Kemitzvah. there's two elements of tzedakah. There's an obligation and there's a mitzvah to it. We'll go through some of the text in a few minutes, going through the parsha of tzedakah in the Torah. But going beyond that, what is the purpose of giving tzedakah? Now, you may seem like your knee-jerk reaction is, well, okay, well, to make people feel better, to help people. No. You have a poor person. So this is a story that Rabbi Daniel Feldman likes to tell. Imagine that you have somebody that won the lottery, you know, the Powerball, you know, $2 billion. And so you hire this new, you know, you start a foundation and you hire somebody to manage the foundation and you tell them, I want you to go find a really poor person and cut them a check for $10 million. I want them to be able to get them on their feet. And I want you to show me the person that you're giving it to. So after a month, the guy brings in a really poor-looking person, really destitute-looking person. Here he is. He tells me the whole life story. Really sounds like a really poor person. Give him the check. He's so happy, and he walks out. As he leaves this guy's house, the wealthy person looks out the window, and he sees this poor man taking off his bedraggled clothing, putting on nice clothing, and then shaking the hand of the foundation manager and driving away in a nice, normal car. And you go over to the guy, and you say, like, what happened here? And so the manager said, well, to be honest, there's nobody here that really needs that kind of money. But I wanted you to feel good. So I hired an actor. to dress up like a poor person. He didn't keep the money. We're reinvesting it. And then you'd fire the guy. But yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that to Avraham in next week's Parsha. Avraham was so sad that he couldn't do chesed give tzedakah. He couldn't do chesed for somebody. So Hashem brought angels who don't need food, don't need to wash their feet. They don't need any of this stuff. And yet he brought them. How is Avraham supposed to feel? Like, what's the point of that? And again, we'll go through some answers to that. But part of it, which the Rambam talks about, is that tzedakah is not only for the other person, it's also for you. It's to refine who you are as a giving person. One of the extreme cases of that, the Ramban talks about, is the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. So this bothered me the first time I heard this. It took a couple of years of Rebbeim brainwashing me to accept it. But I'm being sarcastic, but It bothered me the first time I heard it, that the Ramban says that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, of sending away the mother bird before you take it, is not because we have mercy on the animal per se. It's to refine our character traits to not be cruel people. And that's why the Torah, and that's why the Mishnah in Bracha says that you shouldn't say in davening that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has mercy on the mother bird, should have mercy on us, because that's not the point of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to refine your character trait. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his own cheshbonos about the birds. The same thing is true with tzedakah. We'll see in the Gemara in Bava Basra, the Roman general asked Rabbi Akiva, saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created the world with equal wealth distribution. He obviously didn't. So what are you doing here? What are you doing reallocating and redistributing wealth if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want that? And Rabbi Akiva said, so we should be, he gives a couple of answers. One answer is that we should be saved from the judgment of Gehenna, that we should have schar, that we should get reward. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva is conceding that we are helping HaKadosh Baruch Hu do what he needs to do, doing what is right, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done that on his own. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done that. The reason why he didn't is for our own personal benefit, to refine our character and get schar. So that in itself is another potential reason why it's in Yoredeya and not Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat is interpersonal. Yoredeya, sometimes it is, but that's less of the point. By Yoredeya, it's whether I am supposed to do this or not supposed to do this. It's about me and God, me and other people, but it's self-centric. That's another reason why it might be in Yoredeya. And the third challenge of learning Hilchos Tzedakah is historical and cultural. We'll see in Tanakh, I'm giving so much of an introduction, but we'll see after this brief introduction, when we learn Parshas Re'eh, which is where the majority of Hilchos Tzedakah is sourced in, the context is about agriculture. The context is about Shemitah, about land. I don't think Matnas Aniyim is in that particular place, but it's in the context of Shemitah and Hashmatas Ksafim, forgiving loan debts. The economy worked in a certain way, and society worked in a certain way in the time of the Torah. With the exception of, like, Zvulun, most people had little farms, went to the market, and traded a little bit and sold a little bit. For the most part, it was a very localized economy. Mm-hmm. They weren't that many big cities. You know, Yerushalayim was a big city, and the Shomron, there was another big city. But, like, there were little villages. So what was tzedakah then? Tzedakah back then was, you didn't have administrative centers. You didn't have what the Gemara later calls Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir, like the seven elders of the city that had some, like, was like some elected body of government. You didn't have that. You had individual people that when a guy was undergoing hard times, you would give him a little bit of money. You would prevent him from this further spiraling into poverty. So tzedakah in the time of Tanakh was just, you know, give him a little bit of money. Don't if somebody comes to your door, be nice and give him some money. In addition to that, we had matnos aniyim, we had meiser ani, we had leket, mm-hmm. we had shikha, we had peya, we had all of these things as part of a very individualized tzedakah component. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, you have an obligation to do this, you do this, you do this. But it's not, none of it is communal. If you look in the Rambam, so where is Hilchos Tzedakah in the Rambam? Hilchos Matnas Aniyim. The halachos of gifts to the poor is in Sefer Zerah, in agriculture mitzvos, even though the economy changed in the time of the Rambam already. Once you get into the Gemara, it begins to shift. You now have communal types of tzedakah, but there's no more meiser. So nowadays, you may have heard of the term giving meiser, giving 10%. Where does that come from? The Torah doesn't talk about it by tzedakah. It's similar to what we did to give meiser ani. So we have now begun to transpose concepts. Hilchos Tzedakah has evolved over history to look very different than the context that the Torah was talking about, and even the Gemara, right? Because the Gemara already had some forms of government and organized welfare, right? You had the Tamchoi, you had the other levels of Tzedakah that were considered part of tax. But now, in a global economy, what's my city? Right, so we live in Riverdale. Riverdale's part of the Bronx. Riverdale is part of the tri-state area. But it's even more complicated than that. I daven here. Where do I send my kids to school? Maybe an SAR, but if I send them to MTA, to Frisch, to TABC, those are different states. Forget about different towns. Those are different states. So how do I define my individual orbit and my communal orbit? So all of those things, all of those terminologies have changed, and so the way we think about tzedakah is very different. I was talking to a friend of mine who learned Hilchos Tzedakah 2 years ago, and he said he observed something very interesting. He said that Hilchos Tzedakah in the Shulchan Aruch is pretty robust. Like, there's about 30 pages worth of Hilchos Tzedakah. Then he said that all the Mefarshim go quiet for about 250 years. And then all of the tshuvas start picking up again. And I said, yeah, you want to know why? Because they had no money then. They were always on the run. All of their communities in Poland were being destroyed at the time, you know, from Chmielnytsky and all that. And then they had little shtetlach. So there were no shilas of tzedakah. And then it's only with increased globalization, increased affluence, and increased integration that people have to essentially rework all of Hilchos Tzedakah. So those are sort of the three, I guess, challenges, some of them conceptual, some of them technical, and some of them historical, that we'll have to grapple with. But so now we can finally start. So with all of that in mind, let's open up to Parshas Re'eh. It's the end of the Parsha of Re'eh. So just for some context, yeah, so let us start, let's start from page 1016. It's Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Zayin. So this is right before the Kriyas HaTorah for Yamim Tovim, of Kol HaBachar. So on and it's in the middle of Aser Ta'aser. So just as just parenthetically, there's a drasha on the words of Aser Ta'aser that you should give Meiser. Mm-hmm. So what is the drasha? Aser Bishvil Shetis Asher, that you should give Meiser so that you will become wealthy. So already this context of Meiser is talking about tzedakah. Just also connected to that, that's one of the differences between Truma and Meiser. Rav Yecheskel Sarna, the old Rosh Yeshiva in Chevron, he said that Truma has Kedusha because it's a karban to Hashem, that Hashem gives to the Kohanim. Meiser has no Kedusha because it's tzedakah, that the Levium are poor because they're not supposed to work, because they're supposed to be focusing on the Beis HaMikdash and teaching Torah, so you have to give tzedakah. That's why wealth doesn't talk about wealth by giving Truma. Also, Truma is a lot smaller, but the point of Truma is a karban. The point of Meiser is tzedakah. Anyway, so on page 1016, we're sort of in the middle. It's the first new paragraph, Pasuk Zayin, Ki yiyya b'cha evyon me'achad achicha be'achad she'arecha be'artzecha asher Hashem elokecha nosein lach. So before this pasuk we were talking about Hashmatas Ksafim, that at the end of Shemitah, we are supposed to get rid of all loans. So when we're on that theme of preventing people from descending into poverty, it says, if or when there will be a poor person, an evyon is a stronger language than ani. Ani is somebody that's poor, an evyon is somebody that's destitute. Me'achad achicha, from one of your brothers. Now, that word is also important. So why does it say achicha? So who's not an achicha? So we'll get to the male versus female thing in a second, but let's just say achicha refers to Jews. So that means that there's no mitzvah of tzedakah for non-Jews, but there's actually in between categories. So what about a ger toshav? A ger toshav is somebody who there's different opinions as to what it is, but perhaps the most standard explanation is a ger toshav is somebody that has formally accepted on themselves the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach. They're not Jewish. The Rambam says also they're not going to eat nevelos and trefos. They can eat non-kosher animals, but there has to be some shechting involved. I'm sorry? Halal. Okay, yeah. Essentially halal. So if they keep halal and they don't kill Jews. So that also may be called achicha. So according to some opinions, there is a mitzvah of tzedakah to a ger toshav. Also, what happens if the Jew is not from? Right, there are other areas where we also say achicha, like by ribbis, where we say that if somebody is, again, contemporary times, if somebody's not observant, may be different, but if somebody is consciously rebelling against Torah Judaism because they don't want to believe in it, there may not be a problem, there may not be an issur of ribbis, and there may not be a chiyuv of tzedakah. It might be good policy so that you could get them to, you know, feel good, but if I have to prioritize a frum Torah observant Jew with somebody that's actively rebelling against Torah Judaism, I may have to prioritize and give it to the Torah observant person.
Wait a second. Yeah, that's fine dandy. On the other hand, if you go to Masechet Yuma,
Yes, okay. So one of the drashos of saving a life uses that same language. So there are different sources for why we're allowed to be Michal Shabbos or transgress Isurim to save a life. One of them is that Achicha, and so what happens if he's not an Achicha anymore? Maybe I shouldn't have to. And the answer is, well, maybe you don't. Then that's why we have other sources that tell you that you have to. There are other sources that say that you have to save those lives. But that particular, I guess once we're on that topic, the reason why there are different drashas is not just to round out all the different permutations. Meaning the Torah could have just said, save lives even if you have to be over Isur. The reason why it has different ones that cover different cases is to show you that those are all different values for why you have to save a life, even if you have to transgress an Avera. So this particular value of preserving the life of a brother, so that might not be true, that might not hold water over here, but there's another value that I have to honor to save his life, even to be over an Isser. Okay.
Let me take it one step further.
Okay.
You go to the Niduyim, okay? Viduyim, I'm sorry. Niduyim is something else. Viduyim. You go to the Viduyim, and you get Chatam, Avonos, of showing.
Yeah.
There are three categories. One of them, depending on who you believe, is a Morid.
Okay.
Now,
well, you're trying to get them to the Tshuva, you should say it. You should get them to the Tshuva, so they should say it. Yeah, that's what I would say. Anyway, so just moving on. So that's Achicha. Now, Be'achad She'arecha. So why does it say that?
Well, first, your community, and that after that, you can, you know, first deal with your local...
In even agricultural society, people live in little villages.
Yeah, so exactly. So the Sifrei, the Medrash Halacha here, it says that this is telling you the concentric circles of tzedakah. Achicha, so family. Achad she'arecha, your community. Be'artzecha, which artzecha is it? Asher Hashem lokecha nosein lach. Eretz Yisrael. So first comes family, then comes your own community, then comes Eretz Yisrael, then comes other people. Lo se'ameitz es levavcha, v'lo sikpots es yadcha me'achicha ha'evyon. So what does that mean? Lo se'ameitz es levavcha means you shouldn't close your heart. V'lo sikpots es yadcha, and you shouldn't close your hand me'achicha ha'evyon from your destitute brother. We'll get back to that in a second. Let's do the next pasuk. Ki pasach tiftach es yadcha lo. Rather, you should surely open your hand, v'ha'avet ta'avitenu, which means what? What does avot mean? Means basically to lend. Dai machsaro asher yechsar lo. Enough. Dai means enough, but it means almost in a curtailing sort of way. The name of Hashem, Shin Dalid Yud, Shakai, is because that the world exploded like a big bang until HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Dai, that's enough expansion. So, Dai Machsaro, and Machsar means lacking. So, Dai Machsaro means enough that he shouldn't be lacking. Meaning, the mentality is, I give, I give, I give, and then at some point I have to cut off the revenue stream. How much? Asher Yechsar Lo. That he is lacking. So, how much do I have to give?
Depends who you're giving to.
Right. So the Gemara says you're supposed to give him whatever he is used to, which is crazy. If I have, now again, I'm using this as an extreme example, and it might not actually be true. But if at face value, what that means then is that if I have two people that come to me. One guy is a middle-class person that fell on hard times, and another guy is from the top 1% whose entire stock portfolio crashed, and he's got nothing now. But beforehand, he had a mansion and was driving this luxury car. I have an unlimited amount of money, or I have enough to give both of them. I actually have to give the rich guy more.
To restore him to his status beforehand.
Whatever it is. And the Gemara says, like, there was this wealthy guy that fell on hard times, we'll see the Gemara, so they gave him enough money to afford a servant, to afford animals, to afford good food, because that's what he was missing. So there's a field, this year I'm doing research for the SAC Center, in YU, about like Western values and Judaism and stuff. So there's this field of philosophy which kind of gained notoriety with the whole Sam Bankman-Fine guy called effective altruism. So this philosophy is basically trying to, through logic and math, figure out how do you measure good? What is the best way to do good? So if somebody gives you $1 million, what is the best thing that I can do with this? So it might be you could make the argument that I'm supposed to give enough money to everybody that would improve everybody's quality of life the most. So everybody here, if I go to a third world country, or I could give the money to everybody in Riverdale. As hard as some people in Riverdale have it, probably there are people in Africa that have it a lot worse. So maybe I should give it to them. So halacha says no, your city comes first. But even beyond that, I would think that I should give the poor person just as much as I give this wealthy guy that fell on hard times, I should give them the same amount. But the Torah says no. That's not how we measure good, or maybe that's not the point of tzedakah. The point of tzedakah may not be to do the most good. That might not be the point of tzedakah. Again, it's not in Choshen Mishpat. It's in Yoredeya. There's Isser Veheter here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his own cheshbonos about how he wants wealth to be distributed, and one way or another it'll get that way.
How about equality?
So, this is not equality.
That's the point. This is what they're trying to do now. If you give each one, not the same amount, but give each one what they need, you've got, in a certain sense, equality.
So in a certain sense, yes. So, like in the kibbutz system, so depending on, assuming that your kids don't live in like a communal area, like in some kibbutzim, but like if you have family units, so you get a house. The size of your house depends on how many kids you have, or depends on how many family people you have in your family. So you could say that that's equality, but that's not what Chazal are talking about.
Isn't there also an assumption that if you give to the guy that had a lot,
right,
and it gets him back on his feet, that he in turn will give more than a poor person who you gave a smaller amount and got him on his feet with a medial job, and therefore he can't give back as much.
Okay, so you're advocating sort of for like a trickle-down economic type of framework that this guy will be best optimized to impact the rest of society if you bring him back to his original state. I don't know, maybe that's not true though. Even if you agree to the trickle-down thing, why does he need to drive a Rolls Royce in order to give tzedakah? Another almost counterintuitive thing, halacha of tzedakah, which we'll do right after kofin ha-tzedakah, is in ani. In ani is obligated to give tzedakah. And Beis Din might not be able to force him to give tzedakah. But a poor person is obligated to give tzedakah, he just has to give less. So once again, if the whole point is equality or doing the most good, that's not doing the most good at all. It's inefficient.
But that falls into the category of you giving tzedakah not because you need it, but because you raise the person's self-esteem a little bit.
So you're giving a reason that maybe it's because of self-esteem. I don't know, maybe. We'll have to see. But this concept of dai machsaro asher yechsar lo, that really throws a wrench into the conventional way of thinking of tzedakah. Which, by the way, what's the shorash of tzedakah?
Tzedek,
which means what?
Righteousness.
Justice. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdov. As opposed to chesed. Right? I would have to, like, the word charity comes, I forget the exact Latin phrase, but it's related to Christian, but it's Christian kindness. That's where the Latin phrase comes from, Christian kindness. Tzedakah is not kindness. Tzedakah is justice, that this is how it needs to be. There's something not right in the world. I'm not trying to improve things. I'm not trying to make it better. It's not that the status quo is okay, but I can improve it. It's that there's something wrong here, and I need to create justice. Mm-hmm. So, again, it might be a little bit counterintuitive, but that may be where Asher Yechzar Lo is. That this guy's original state is where he was supposed to be. Why he's supposed to be like that, I don't know. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his cheshbonos. But Tzedek demands that I restore him to that state. That's perhaps one way of looking at tzedakah. The other way, which Rav Hirsch talks about in this parsha, is that everything belongs to Hashem. So tzedek means it's not that it's mine, it's somebody else's. And so tzedek, justice, it's not chesed. Chesed means it's mine, but I'm doing something nice with my stuff to benefit you. Tzedek means no, I demand that it goes from me to somebody else. Itamar Rosenzweig, or Rabbi Itamar Rosenzweig now, is a hero. If you saw in the Torah to Go for, what's it called? Yomim Noraim and Sukkos. So he has a whole article about tzedakah. I'll quote it. I think I have a slightly different take on it than he does. But his major thesis is based on an opinion of the Kitzos, which we'll see. That the mechanism, how can Beis Din force somebody to give money? What's the mechanism? So one mechanism that the Kitzos advocates for is a term called mamoni gabach. That my money, what's legally my money, is in your property and you're refusing to surrender it. So Beis Din can come in as sort of agents of the peace and take the money that belongs to me and give it to me from your assets. So the Kitzos says that money, Tzedek demands that money is not yours, it's actually my money or the Ani's money. And so Beis Din, not because they paskin that it's my money, it is my money. They're coming in as sort of the muscle, as the Torah's muscle, to just take it from you and give it to me.
And the obvious question is, why'd you get it in the first place?
Well, that was the question in Bava Basra that the Roman governor asked Rabbi Akiva. Apparently, it's to save us from Gehenna. But again, I'm trying to just lay out all this groundwork. But that's another thing. That's another factor.
Before
we
leave this pasuk,
yeah,
it doesn't talk about giving per se. It's talking about lending.
Yes.
So it's not. I mean, lending is a form of tzedakah in some sense, but it also has some sort of obligation on the. Let's call it the borrower to give it back.
Right. So, okay. I guess once we're there, we can talk about it. So I translated based on what Arts Girl says as avot as lending. What's another way to say lending?
Halva.
Right. Halva, which we know is in the Torah. It's a biblical language. Im kesef talve es ami. So why doesn't it just say that here? Of Ve'halve talvenu, or something like that. So look at Rashi. This is the second column, third line. Ve'have tavitenu im lo ratza bimatana, ten lo behalva. If he doesn't want it as a gift, meaning he's too proud. I don't know. He doesn't say. Then give it to him as a halva. Now this Rashi is problematic for. Not problematic, but challenging for what reason? I would think, we know that the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, they all say that the highest level of tzedakah is giving him business, essentially allowing him to self-generate. Mm-hmm. Handouts are a lower level, A, because it's more demeaning, but also because you're not helping him grow.
Right.
You're giving him limited funds.
And, he has to come back again.
Right, so you're not helping him. So I would think that a halva would be even better. So that's, maybe if there's time at some point, we'll go back to this Rashi. But what Rashi's saying, though, for our purposes now, is that avota avitenu doesn't just mean lending. It includes lending as part of a broader scheme, if you will, of strengthening somebody. Avot avitenu doesn't literally mean lending. It means strengthening them. Not like in a social sense. Not in like a chizuk sense. But it, like, bolstering them and their financial state. So that means giving as a gift. It also means lending. So it's a good point. I mean, that's why it uses that different language. But anyway, so let's go back, though, to the action word before. And ki pasach tiftach. So this is the sort of opposite of what we said in the first pas in the pasuk beforehand. Lo sa'ameitz es levavecha velo sikpos es yadecha. So imagine you're the Rambam now. So you're counting mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh. So how many do we characterize here? So you say one of each. You say a lav and a mitzvah saseh. Okay, so let's keep going. Keep that in mind. Now we say, Hishamar lecha, guard yourself, pen iye davar im levavicha b'li ya'al, lest there be something in your heart saying, karva shnas hasheva shnas hamita, shnas hashmita, that shmita's coming, and we just learned, we didn't learn it, but the previous section in the Torah says, debts all get erased after shmita. You're not going to want to give to him because you're afraid the debt's going to be wiped out. Vikara alecha el Hashem, he'll call out to Hashem. V'haya becha chet, and now there will be a sin. The fact that the ani will call out to Hashem, now Hashem's going to get angry at you, or now he'll consider you liable. The first words are of that pasuk are hishamer lecha, which is terminology for Allah. So are there two lavin now, or is it still just one? Keep that in mind. Now, pasuk yud, noson titein lo, you shall surely give to him. Which again is another positive language. So big question, how many mitzvahs of tzedakah are there? Are there four? Are there two? Are there one? Rosenzweig talks about this in his piece. The Torah just seems to be doubling up with all of this. V'lo yeira levavicha. And now we have another emotional part, that your heart shouldn't be angry, b'sitchalo. So it's saying, even when you give him, I don't want you to feel bad. Ki biglal hadavar hazeh yivarechcha Hashem elokecha b'chol ma'asecha u'b'chol mishlach yadecha. Because that's why God gave you all this stuff. God made you successfully, so you should give him. The Torah is doing something very rare here. The Torah is actually commanding us to have a certain emotional response when we do an action. It happens, but it's very rare. Probably one of the more famous ones is the last of the Aseres HaDibros, Los Achmod. So according to some, there has to be an action. According to other Rishonim, it's just you shouldn't be burning with jealousy. And the Ibn Ezra says, how can the Torah command me on emotions? Over here, it's not purely an emotional thing. The Torah tells you, do something, and when you do it, I want you to feel or not feel something specific, which is very rare. And the Ramban, just as a spoiler, the Ramban says, the Ramban forgot to count that as a mitzvah. I'm not, though. The Ramban actually thinks there is a lav to feel bad when you give tzedakah. Round this out, the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, in one of his letters, he wrote a number of letters that were appended to the Sefer Tanya about, and some of them are about tzedakah, sort of like, not necessarily fundraising for himself, but fundraising for Eretz Yisrael, like communities in Eretz Yisrael. And he said, how are you supposed to gauge how much tzedakah you're supposed to give until you've sort of fulfilled your obligation? Which again, is a question. You might, right, yeah.
It
says until it hurts. Because up until that point, you're not giving. Up until that point, it's just you have extra. Tzedakah means to give of yourself to somebody else, meaning it's God blessed you and you have to not feel bad. If you're just giving and it doesn't matter to you and you don't have that nisayon of the lo yeira levavcha, it says that's not tzedakah. So the Ramban actually considers this to be a lav, which further accentuates the personal component, again, of why it's in Yoredeya as opposed to Choshen Mishpat. No one, okay, in Hilchos Dayanim it says you're supposed to accept what the Dayanim Paskin at the end of a court case. The Mirshin and Pirkei Yavah says that, everybody should be happy about it, but there's not a lav. There's no positive or negative mitzvah. You're supposed to do what the Beis Din says. You don't have to be happy about it. You just have to respect it. The Torah is obligating me in how I'm supposed to feel, which shows that there's a personal side to it, and the way it transforms me is a critical part of the mitzvah. We'll also see this, the Rambam in his... the Rambam says that if you have the two options to either give one lump sum or to give multiple times... Mm-hmm. Now, again, the question is, well, what happens if the impact will be different? The Achronim talk about it. But if you have the option, assuming that they'll have equal implications, to give one lump sum or multiple, he says, do the multiple because it helps me become a better person. It makes me more of a giving person. That's nice. That's a nice mitzvah. But why is the Rambam bringing that down as a halacha? Because again, v'lo yera levavcha, even though the Rambam doesn't think that's lav, like the Ramban does, the emotional component is a critical part of what tzedakah is. And then we'll now see pasuk yud aleph, ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. Torah is basically saying, look, this is the way of the world, that there's always going to be poor people. That's how society works. Universal income is not going to work. Again, without getting super political. But super political. But just from an economic perspective, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, you will never eradicate poverty. We'll have to do stuff to fix it, and to minimize it, and to help it. There's always going to be poor people, and therefore, Al Kain, and therefore, Anochi Mitzavcha Lemor Pasoach Tiftach Es Yadcha, Le'ochicha, La'aniyecha, U'le'evyonecha. So now, Be'artzecha. Right, Be'artzecha. So now we have, again, all that reiteration of all these phrases. So we have achicha. Now we have ani. We did not have an ani beforehand. An ani is a higher level, or somebody is a little bit more than an evyon. Seems like maybe we can't eradicate evyonus. In evyon, somebody that literally has no food for the day, maybe... society, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, can fix that. Just also parenthetically, maybe we can fix that.
Lo yechdal evyon.
Oh no, you're right. I'm sorry. No, you're right. I apologize. I'm sorry. I meant ani. I'm sorry. Evyon meaning
evyon.
Evyon is the short term. I'm sorry. I flipped it around. Evyon means somebody that is destitute and has nothing to eat. There's always going to be somebody that, for a very short period of time, will be in need. Because things happen. In ani, which is basically systemic, low class or poverty class, maybe that we can help. Maybe that we can begin to... not rebalance, because again, it's not balancing, but maybe we can fix that scenario. And Rav Yitzchak Breidowitz, he talks about how a lot of the, social welfare programs that the Torah has are to prevent people from spiraling down into the poverty class. So, yes, there will always be acute need. Something bad could happen. You know, he may get robbed, or there may be a flash flood that'll wipe away his entire field. There may be a fire. There will always be acute need, but a poverty class is something that the Torah says that might not necessarily need to exist if you fulfill all of these halachos properly. I'm sorry, that's what I meant. You're 100% right, Kenny. Okay, so now that we have this, we have a couple minutes left. So I just want to look at how the Rambam phrases the mitzvah of tzedakah. So, this is, and I said, Hilchos Matnas Aniyim in Seder Zrayim. So, at the beginning of each section in Rambam, the Rambam counts the number of mitzvahs. So, keep the Chumashim open, and let's see what he counts. So, he says, in addition to Leket, Shikcha, and Peh, and all that stuff, he says, Litzein Tzedakah Kemases Yad, that you're supposed to give tzedakah according to however much your hand is able to give, and then shelo ye'ametz levavo al ha'ani, that you shouldn't close off your heart to the ani. Not velo ye'ra levavcha, that the Ramban counts. But the Rambam says there are two mitzvahs. There's a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. The positive mitzvah is to give, and the negative mitzvah is, interestingly, what the Rambam phrases as to close your heart off, as opposed to, what's the other thing that the Pasuk says?
Yodecha.
The Rambam, in the koteret, in the title, he focuses on the heart as opposed to the hand. But again, that's something that we'll have to focus on, and then he actually starts off in the last parak of Matnas Aniyim to talk about tzedakah. He says, "Chayavin anu lihizoher b'mitzvas tzedakah yeser mikol mitzvas aseh," that we are obligated to be careful about tzedakah more than any other mitzvah aseh, which is very uncharacteristic of the Rambam. In general, to say something like that, but also it seems to run in direct opposition to a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Havei Zahir b'mitzvah kala kevachamura, that we should be just as careful about a superficially light mitzvah saseh than a heavy one. And here, the Rambam says, no, you should be really careful about tzedakah. Shehat tzedakah simin litzadike zera Avram avinu, because it shows that we're connected to Avram. Shenemar, pasuk that we'll be reading in a few weeks, ki adativ leman asher yitzaveh, that God testifies to about Avraham, I know he teaches his kids to do tzedakah. Ve'en kise Yisrael miskonein v'dasa emes omedes ela b'tzedakah, and the throne of the Jewish people is not established, and true religion does not stand ela b'tzedakah. Meaning Judaism, Yiddishkeit, the Beis HaMikdash can't be established without tzedakah. Ve'ein Yisrael negalin ela b'schus hatzedakah, and the geula will only happen with tzedakah. So this is a big question. I mean, again, the Rambam adds divrei hashkafa and divrei musar, but the musar that he's giving seems to go against the Mishnah. So with this, we'll close. The Rav has this idea. The Rav says that there are sort of two ways we can measure mitzvos. This is from a Magid published this book. It's a book called Halachic Morality. This is based on a course that the Rav gave in Revel before he became Rosh Yeshiva in YU. Before he became a Rosh Yeshiva, there's a lot of politics in allowing him to succeed his father. A lot of people didn't want him to. In the interim, he taught in the graduate school. So he taught a class on tzedakah. And so he says there's two ways to measure the worth of mitzvos. The first is by what it accomplishes. Doing chesed for somebody, or eating matzah, or doing a bris milah, you'll accomplish something. So when it comes to averos, we know which are worse because the Torah basically tells us based on the punishment. The Torah doesn't tell us the reward for most mitzvos because we don't know them. However, he says that's just when it's talking about the impact that the mitzvah has. He says if you look through the Gemara, though, the Gemara tells us that there are other sort of metrics to measure positive mitzvos, not about the impact that they have, but what they symbolize and what they mean for our identity. So the classic example that the Rav quotes is about tefillin. So what's the punishment for not wearing tefillin?
Is there any?
Right. Maybe there's not. No. There's not. It's a mitzvah saseh. So if I don't wear tefillin, I was mevatel a mitzvah saseh. Now, another mitzvah saseh. What's the punishment if I don't give myself a bris milah?
Karis.
So I would say that not giving a bris milah is worse than not putting on tefillin. Then the Gemara says, though, in Rosh Hashanah, that, and there's different ways to understand this Gemara, but the classical understanding, according to the Rambam at least, which is where the Rav is coming from, is that if you have, let's say, you know, how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu determine on Rosh Hashanah whether you're a tzaddik or rosh or a beinoni? See, he adds up all of his mitzvahs and all of his averos, and doesn't just mean, he doesn't count them, it's the impact of them, and only Hashem can do that. But he says, let's say, in some freaky way, it's equal. Let's say, according to Hashem's cheshbonos, it's equal. The Rambam, based on this Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, says, if you never wore tefillin in your life, that's factored in, then it tips the scale. a karkafta de lo manach tefillin, a head that did not wear tefillin once in their lifetime, you don't get punished for it. But if your scales are equal, that tips the scale to make you a Rasha. Why? Because tefillin symbolizes a tremendous connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem has his own tefillin that references his bond with the Jewish people, just like we have that references our bond. And so, because you didn't wear tefillin at all in your lifetime, again, you're not getting punished for that. Because the impact of not having a bris milah is much worse than the impact of not wearing tefillin. But that's just talking about whatever cosmic or interpersonal or spiritual impact it has. In terms of the identity of you and Klal Yisrael, there tefillin plays an important role. So the Rav says that's the same thing over here, by tzedakah. Yes, when the Mishnah is talking about Pirkei Avos, in Pirkei Avos, it means that, yeah, I don't know, I can't measure the impact of tzedakah versus tefillin versus eating matzah on Pesach. There are all these different mitzvahs I say. Some are ben adam l'makom, some are ben adam l'chavero, and I have to be careful with all of them. But that's just from an impact, from doing the mitzvah. But in terms of my identity as a Jew, tefillin is way up there. Tzedakah is also way up there. And that's something also that we should keep in mind as we go through this. What makes tzedakah so unique that it's critical for our identity? And the Rav develops this, and I think we'll see this through a lot of the halachos, is achicha, is the concept of kinship. The Rav's conception of tzedakah is that it redeems the concept of brotherhood. It elevates the concept of brotherhood. That because it has to be achicha to give it to him, so now we become less of just, it's not tribalism per se, but we now have become an elevated achicha. We have become an elevated family. And when you think about how we can be kofin al hatzdaka for a community, that I can forcibly make you part of this community, and I can forcibly elevate our status as a community, that's part of what the mitzvah of tzedakah is supposed to do. So thank you. This has been a wonderful introduction. And next time, we'll hopefully start going through some of the sugyos be'iyah. Okay. Have a wonderful day.